gypsy woman told my mother, before I was born, there's a boy child coming, gotta be a son of a gun, gonna make pretty women jump and shout, and the world will know. What's this all about? You know I'm here. Everybody knows I'm here. Well, I'm a hoochie-coochie man. Everybody knows I'm here. Got a blackhead bone, got a mocho too, got a John the Conqueror, gonna mess with you, gonna make you girls leave me by my hand, and the world wanna know. Seventh hour on a seventh day on a seventh month, seven doctors say he was born for good luck, that you'll see. I got $700 baby.
Stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down. Gonna stand my ground, won't be turned around. And I'll keep this world from dragging me down. Gonna stand my ground, and I won't back down. Thank you.
Rock, John, and Scott.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Scotty Robertson. We've got Rocky Stucci sitting over there in Hudson, Wisconsin, in full uniform.
I am.
How you doing? You make me want to salute.
I feel really good right now. I feel very empowered.
All you need now, you need to take off the shirt, go bare-chested, put on a pair of red suspenders, and all the ladies would love you. Wow. That's a fireman thing, right?
Yeah.
Not for me. Hey, sorry, I don't want to speak that way.
Sorry for the abrupt stop on the music there. And you know what? When we were queuing in, I'm so used to saying, we count in and we say mics are hot,
right?
And I instantly, because you know you produce shows, and so I instantly turn my mic down, thinking that I'm not part of the family. But I'm here. My mic's up. We're here. We're hot. We're on fire.
And by the way, all I want to do to you, Rocky, and to all of America, I want to apologize for my emails. They were a mistake, and I will never do that again if you vote for me.
Didn't she just say a week ago that she's not going to apologize for her emails?
Exactly. Hold on one second, everybody listening. Son, I am on the radio, so I can't talk to you right now.
Hi, son.
Rocky says hello. And I'm actually not in the palatial Intrepid studios where we broadcast the Intrepid radio show on Sunday night, but I am sitting in almost the outdoors. So we may have some ambient noise that interferes with us, such as I live in a quiet little neighborhood out in the country, but there is a canning factory at the end of the street across the railroad tracks. And so in the summertime, my quiet little peaceful road has been chosen for the most direct route from the side road over to the canning factory for the bean trucks, which semi-trucks just go by every 20 minutes.
You know, I just thought of something, Scotty. You know, if something ever goes down, and let's just say that we can't have access to grocery stores or food or water, you live right down the street from a canning factory.
At a canning factory at the end of the street. I wonder how armed they will be.
They'll be shooting beans at you.
I'm going to have to go over and apply for a job, quote, quote, and say, hey, can I look around the plant and see what you're all about and see where all the armed guards would be stationed?
That's funny. I never thought about that. You are well prepared, brother.
I'm a block away from a lifetime supply of green beans, canned beets, and what else comes through here? Potatoes sometimes.
You know, I'm sorry I have to say this. You know, I'm looking at you're wearing a different style hat today.
I am. I could not fit the headset over my fedora or under my fedora. So, and it's, by the way, my Bob Marley wooden headset with real leather.
I actually love that headset.
I'm going to tell you a little secret. My wife got it for me at a garage sale for $5. About 2 years ago.
That's a studio headset.
That's a studio headset. It deadens the world to me. But I'm wearing that, and now I've got my Scottish bonnet. Hey, I'm from the 42nd Royal Highlanders. Hey, laddie.
I was waiting for it. So back to what you're saying. So, you know, now that you apologize, I'm going to assume that most Hillary lovers have forgiven her.
You know, I think that's the plan. That's what she had in mind. And I will tell you, folks, it's really hard for me to be objective about Hillary Clinton. But then again, Rocky, the Situation Room is not an objective show.
Correct. Roger that,
I don't think we could be accused of that.
No, you know, and I'm not going to lie. I have been a little angry the last couple of weeks. And I've been trying to keep my head and my thoughts about myself. But I just get so upset, Scotty. I know we talk about this all the time. I get so upset with everything that we're witnessing today, not just politically, but just within our own neighborhoods, within our streets, within our society, within our culture, within the world. And it frustrates me, brother. And it seems like it's getting worse and nothing is being done. And I get so frustrated when I see this, everything.
It's so easy to get frustrated with everything. And, you know, it's funny. We have it's like being a kid and growing up. When we're a kid, the world and the universe is a very small place. Mm-hmm. You know, you can your world doesn't extend very far. Your understanding of government and politics goes as far as, oh, that stupid history class you have to take from Mr. McLean in high school. And then you go out of the work world, you start to see more of the world. You start to, as you get a little older, you start to see what's going on. And if you have any effort at all that you put into examining what goes on in government, what's going on in the world, you could become very cynical very quick, which is usually preceded by anger.
Right.
And so everything you start to see, and you know, we tend to be a little more right-leaning with some of the things that we talk about here, but I'm not going to put words in your mouth. For me, I'm more conservative than I am even center of the road, unless you want to call me, like Micah Hanks calls himself, a radical centrist.
Right, right.
And that's about where I would plug myself in. And Micah, if you're out there listening, if I may, I'm sorry, but I make no apologies. I've just stolen your moniker, radical centrist. And because if Hillary, if I saw this coming from Jeb Bush or Donald Trump or anybody like that that's running on the right, I would have the same problem that I have with Hillary Clinton lying to the public. Right. And it's so obvious to me that she lies. It's so obvious that, well, let me give her one little benefit of the doubt. Perhaps, now, Rocky, don't go off on me quite yet. Perhaps she's a very good-hearted woman, would make a very good present, and she really didn't realize that she was making a mistake with the emails. Perhaps it was just that, a mistake. And last week when she said she's not going to apologize for anything and wouldn't apologize for anything and then is apologizing this week, perhaps she didn't realize that those two are the same thing, what she's apologizing for. She's not apologizing. Now she's apologizing. I think the apology that she made yesterday is a tactic that's being put in place by her handlers that said, you got to go out there, you got to apologize for this. And what did you think of her sincerity?
I don't buy it. This is typical Clinton fashion. She is completely following the footsteps of Bill, just like Bill came forward. And I did not have sexual relationships with that woman.
With that woman.
And what is it, about a week later he came forward? Because,
yep.
We're right on track here. I mean, so now, about a week ago, go ahead.
And by the way, I remember when all that happened, I was very much more conservative than I even am now. I was a big Rush Limbaugh fan. I would listen to his stuff. That all happened in the mid-90s when that all came down with Bill Clinton. And I remember even back then, people were arguing with me about, well, that's sex. You know, that's his private thing. That's all. You know, what are we, is the government going to come in and impeach him for having sex with an aide? That's his private little mistake. And why is it even in court? Why is all this being done? I remember at the time the argument was it isn't about having sex with a woman. It was about lying to Congress. It was about perjuring himself in court, suborning perjury from others. And these were impeachable offenses. And by the way, Bill Clinton was impeached, if people don't remember that.
Right.
They just did not vote to remove him from office.
What's the difference now? Now, I'm not 100% familiar with the whole impeachment process. So you can be impeached, but you can still fulfill your presidency.
You can. Look at what the word impeach means. Rocky, I'm going to Rocky, you went out and you dropped your drawers and mooned your neighbors. I would say, Rocky, I think that is impeachable character. You should not be doing that. And I'm going to impeach your character for doing that. And now then it would be up to your neighbors to vote whether or not they're going, yes, we all agree. Yes, that's impeachable behavior. And but we're also now going to take a vote to see if we're going to make him move out of his house and go into an apartment on the east side of St. Paul instead of Hudson or stay in his home. And so what happened was they just did not vote to remove him from office.
It kind of don't make sense to me. Why would you impeach somebody?
It doesn't. It's to put it on the record that he did something worthy of impeachment.
Okay.
Now, I remember even the conversation at that time. You look at somebody like Richard Nixon. Now, many of you, if you're my age or older, you remember Richard Nixon. He was running for office. He became president in, what, 72, I want to say. And I was 11 years old at the time when he became president. And then he was he resigned from office over the whole Watergate scandal. And but something that was pointed out at the time was that Richard Nixon did something that Bill Clinton would not do, that certainly Obama would not do if he was ever faced with this. He was a senior statesman, and he was, I think, a classy fellow in his own way, Nixon, no matter what you think of him. And he had some integrity, even though he did wrong things. He had some integrity for the office. And when he resigned because he did not want to take the country through the mess like Bill Clinton took the country through, the mess of impeachment and then possible removal from office. So he resigned. Now, think of what you want of that. I believe the man in his later years, you saw him all over the news all the time. He was always used as a talking head. He became, even the left started to refer to Nixon as a senior statesman before his death. And he was somebody that his character after leaving office, resigning from the office of the presidency, he was laid low for, I think, for a number of years. But then he started doing more punditry work, more speaking, more writing. And they looked to him as a senior statesman because, frankly, what he did was good for the country. And he knew it was good. Now, yes, there's going to be internal motivation. I don't want to take myself through the impeachment process. But I think there was also primary on his mind as a leader of the country. I'm not going to take my country through this. Now, I would ask you a question. This is strictly speculation, strictly opinion. Do you ever see the current president acting with that kind of integrity? I'm going to do this before I take the country through a mess. I don't see it in him.
It seems like every time you hear him talk, he's either ridiculing somebody within office or somebody within the opposite party. This is my biggest part of the president. He is not leading this country.
No, he's not.
I think this is my biggest beef. Are there acts of treason that he's committing? Some think so and others don't. But I think there is no integrity with the president that we have now. I just think that so many things right now with Obama are being buried as much as possible. But I have a feeling that when his presidency is over, what, a little more than a year left? I think that's when all the sparks are going to fly. I think that's when everything's going to come front and forward. And
yes,
a lot of people are going to be hit in the jaw when they find out the truth and the reality of the motives behind our great Messiah, Obama.
I think so, too. Now, let me ask you, let me play a little devil's advocate here. We've hit on this just a little tiny bit in conversation on the show before. Devil's advocate, do you think perhaps the things that Obama has done, like with the Iran nuclear deal and all, and the war in Afghanistan, the war in Iraq or in the Middle East with ISIS, what's going on in the Middle East? Do you think by any chance he may just possibly know something we don't and is doing the right things?
That would be our greatest hope, I think.
That's my greatest hope.
You know, you think that there's something great deeper than, because what we perceive and what we see as public, it almost looks like there's an alternative agenda here. There's some kind of agenda with whether it be religion. I mean, look at the mass immigration that's happening all over Europe right now. I look at what's happening within the Middle East. I mean, there's so many factors here to where you can really think that there's something very nasty happening here. And honestly, Scotty, that's a great question. And our greatest hope would be that there is information that is too delicate for the American people to hear. It is confidential information that something bigger is brewing and he's possibly doing something to prevent mass casualties, or because we are at a very vulnerable state within our world right now. And so great question. And I hope so, brother. I hope so.
I could only hope so. There is so much. Somebody said to me in the social networks not long ago, maybe a week or two ago, they said, well, you just don't like Obama and you want to impugn him for everything. You just don't like him. I said, let me correct you on that. I'll agree with you on one thing. I don't like him. I said, there's many reasons I don't respect him as a president. I honor the office. I don't respect the man. I don't respect his policies. I don't respect the decisions he's made. I don't respect his stance on things. I said, but I don't just go out there looking for reasons to hate Barack Obama. He's still the president. I want him to do right. I want him to do the good things. This is why you have a Congress. I know we're jumping all over the place, folks. And, oh, and by the way, since we didn't say it, this is Scotty Roberts and Rocky Stucci. We got that far. We never said you're listening to The Situation Room right here on the IPBN Alternative Talk Radio Network. But one thing I would want for Obama is to do good things for the country, and I don't think he is. And people say, well, yeah, he's doing good things for people, though. Maybe so. I think that there are some things Obama has done that is good for people, The question is it good for the way the country works?
Well it's good for what people, though? Who was he doing good for?
Let's take one of the first examples. Cash for Clunkers. Remember that deal?
I do. That lasted, what, 3 weeks?
Yeah, 3 weeks. You could go turn in anything you had. If you could drag it into a lot, you could get cash for a new car. The problem is with that was painted as this big picture for he's working for the common man to get the common man wheels. The problem is you still had to be able to qualify for a loan. How many people who are driving clunkers who can't afford insurance, even where in states where it's mandated, mm-hmm. who can't, and they buy that insurance so they can buy they can get whatever car and get their license, and then they drop it and it lapses because I've been there, so I know. They make so little money that these are also people that don't usually qualify for a car loan. So they would have to have the money to buy the car. It wasn't a program that was, here, trade your clunker old rusted out car for a free new car. It was you still had to qualify. I had neighbors that I was renting my house from at the time, and we were not doing well financially. They owned 7 houses in the city we were living in, the little town we were living in. And they did pretty well for themselves. They'd been saving for years. They were an older couple, and they were fine. They did a cash for clunkers. But that was something they didn't really need to do because they were people who had the cash to pay down payments to get – they had spot straight-A credit, could go in and just walk in and get any kind of car loan they wanted to get. So it was people who – it wasn't really painted. The picture was painted that it's going to help the common man who's having some difficulties to get into a new car, but it's really those were not the ones who could take advantage of it. The ones who could take advantage of it were the ones that already had sterling credit and could go in and buy a car, and usually their clunker served as their down payment. So this is when I look at Obama and I say he's done good things. There are good things he's worked on, I think, but then I have to look back at it and say, folks, I got to burst that bubble, though, because I don't think he did it for good things. I think it was what I refer to as this bread and circuses, like the Romans did. The Romans would throw out bread and they'd put on the gladiatorial shows, the circuses, and they did this for free for the people. And it was to win favor, curry favor for the people in power. Because look what we're giving the common people, when in fact the bread and circuses Obama is engaged in rarely helps people. Well, look at even Obamacare, and I cannot speak to all the points of Obamacare cogently, but I do know this is no matter how good you think you're getting it, even if your insurance, and many people have had their insurance, have lost it, have had to change, it's gone up. Some people I know said, my insurance has gone down, it's working great for me. Well, that's great. Well, wait till 2016 when all the new tax penalties start kicking in. Wait until it starts affecting you that way. You're going to see it. So, while there are things that look good on the surface, and I think probably Barack Hussein Obama is probably a guy who came to office and said, I want to do good things. I rather doubt he was evil and had to file down his horns in order to put on a smiley face for the public. I think he came into office thinking he was going to do good things. Yet I think he has also been totally swept under by that office, and probably anybody who gets in there is who is not a strong leader, not of strong character, has to fight this stuff all the time. And I think the more he was in there, the more he was influenced by progressivism, the more he was influenced by the left, he let that take over who he was even more than when he entered the office. And so I don't know that he even realizes. If you were somebody who is the president of the United States, you were protected the way he's protected. You had your followers protecting you the way they follow you. You're doing that. And yes, it's a stressful job, obviously. But do you think he even realizes it? To a sense, that man is going to be sheltered from, unless he doesn't want to be sheltered from it, is sheltered from everything else. And he sees his own political view. He lives in a bubble in the White House. And that's what I think Obama has suffered. And I've often said jokingly, I don't like Obama as a president, but hell, I'll bet he's a great guy to sit down and have a beer with and arm wrestle for the tab. I think he's probably a great guy in that respect, a decent man. But I think he is somebody who is also corrupted by the office because he had so many years where he had the ability to do almost whatever he wanted. And when people, by the way, say the Congress stonewalled everything, they just hate him. And so the right has been stonewalling him in Congress. No, you know what that is? That's called a differing political philosophy. If the right isn't out there just saying, there's a Rocky here in Alabama. We don't think a black man should be president, so we are going to resist that black man, and we are going to do everything we can to make sure he has no functional presidency, and that's how we shall vote. That's the way everybody views the Republican Party, whereas when you look at the Republican Party or you look at the conservatives within the Republican Party, do you think that they were opposing him just because they didn't like a black man in president or a Democrat in president? No. I think for the most part, they resisted him because his political philosophy was night and day to what they believed was the right way to run the country. So you might have a handful of people that are just nasty idiots in office on both sides that are going to do stuff like that. But I think for the most part, you're going to see parties. The parties are there and they have certain platforms that resist what the president might do because they say, I just do not agree with that political philosophy and I cannot support it.
So let me ask you something, Scotty. A lot of people are upset because they feel Obama is trying to turn the United States into an Islamic nation when it comes to beliefs. What's your take on that?
I don't think he's trying to turn us into an Islamic nation. I don't. Jury is out for me on whether he's really a Muslim. And frankly, there's a part of me that says I don't care, because if he is a Muslim, he's obviously not a practicing Muslim. I think he's a reformed Muslim, if he's one at all. He says he's Christian. I'm not even going to get into that because I don't care. What I do care about is the policies he enacts that might allow a foothold for people that might be radical Muslims, radical Islamists. There is such an air of political correctness that allows for certain things. You hear people, you come out, Rocky, we've both done it. We've come out and said, and me especially, and John, who, by the way, we didn't even say this, John Ward is not with us today, if you haven't realized. John, are you there? No, he's not with us.
I'm here, brother.
brother, I'm here. No, John is speaking in a conference in Copenhagen today, so he could not make it back in time for the show. I think that you will see that there are people out there who look at I've lost my train of thought a little bit, so I'm trying to regain it. At the things that Obama does as far as promoting Islam, I don't think he is out there promoting Islam. He cannot promote Islam by the Constitution. That would be elevator and making preference for a religion, right, which the government cannot do. However, I think I see the argument come at me saying, oh, you're just against Muslims. And I was going to say, Rocky, you and I both post at times things that talk about radical Islam.
Radical.
We are not saying you cannot be Muslim and we need to hate Muslims. When I've done that, I've got too many dear-hearted friends that are Muslim but are not part of that radical movement. And all it does is bring tears to their eyes.
Right.
But I do see, pardon me for that, I do see people arguing this point. But Rocky, how can you say that about radical Islam? Have you ever been in their sandals? Do you know what it is they believe? What motivates them? You have to step in and see things from their point of view. And my quick answer to that is, what I see from radical Islam, if I see things from their point of view, I have the right to stick a dagger in your throat and cut it to the back of your spine because you disagree with me. Radical Islam, radical Islam. I'm not talking about Muslims in general. I think most Muslims would be against that. But the problem we have, and I was talking to Sarah Soderlund about this very topic. She is on, by the way, right after the show at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time with Mysteries of the Mind. But I was talking to Sarah Soderlund about this, and I said, the difference is this in mindsets, is that take and put imaginary, if you're sitting with a piece of paper and a pencil, draw a big circle and call this American. And the circle, label it life. And then start putting little dots inside the big circle. One dot is religion. One dot is business. One dot is family, relationship, travel, whatever you want to put in that dot. Life is the circle. And religion and everything else in our lives go inside that circle. That's why in the way we view life, especially in the West, You could change a religion if you wanted to. You could change a marriage if you wanted to. You could change things. It's all dots within one big circle. Now, go to the Islamic way of thinking. The big circle, draw a second circle, call it Muslim or Islamic. The big circle, label it not life, label it religion. And then inside that big circle, start putting down little dots. Dot is one dot is life. One dot is family. One dot is business. One dot is. Now you step back and look at that. Once you've created that for the Muslim mindset, and this is the simplest way to put it, the big circle is not life. The big circle is the religion, and life goes inside that. So every aspect of life is within the circle of the religion. While in the West we tend to believe every aspect of the big circle falls under life, religion included. So this is what I think is going on. Is Obama trying to turn the nation Islamic? No. But I think he is of the mindset that believes we need to understand them from their point of view. And by the way, even Thomas Jefferson, we've talked about this before, who 210 years ago in 1805 was pushing the Congress during the United States battles with the Barbary pirates, which were the Muslims, who were doing the same things they do now. They were taking prisoners. They were beheading people. They were burning people alive, doing all of this. There was an atrocity being committed by the Muslim pirates, the Barbary pirates. And we were at war with them. Think of the Marine Corps song, "From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli." It was at Tripoli in Libya where this was taking place, these battles, one of the major battles that we fought. But Jefferson said, as they called them back then, the Muslims, the Musselmen. He says the Musselmen, and he wrote almost a treatise on this, and I can't quote it off the top of my head, but he said, the Musselmen are welcome in these United States. And they are welcome here, but we cannot let this thing continue. So he actually pushed Congress to totally eliminate what he called the Muslim problem. So I think we've got the same thing going on today.
Scott, he's trying to type and read and talk at the same time.
Sorry about that. just tell me on air.
That's actually well done. Hey, you know what, Scotty? Now, there's been a situation that happened here over the weekend that we're going to talk about here in just a little bit. But there's another news channel just showed up at my door, and they want to do a quick couple-minute interview. So I'm going to have you take over the mic for a few minutes, if you're okay with that.
All right.
And I'm going to step outside. And when I come back, folks, I'm going to share with you guys what exactly I'm being interviewed here. Something that happened last weekend, which is going to kind of lead up to a segment that we're going to talk about within our local communities, which is something very important that we should talk about. So, Scotty, the mic is yours, brother.
Okay. Now, can we go out to break, or will there be no way for me to, since you're running the board over there? Should I just go and we'll go to break when you come back?
You know what? Why don't we go to break right now? And then when we come back, you just take the mic until I get back in. So take us out, Scotty.
Fantastic. Folks, you're listening to The Situation Room with me, Scotty Roberts, and Rocky Stucci, and the errant, traveling, lecturing John Ward in Copenhagen is not with us today, right here on the IPBN Alternative Talk Radio Network. Sit tight. We'll be right back.
In the M&M Survivor Challenge, the sun beats down on the empty quarter.
Hold on, Red. I need a drink. That's better.
Hey, Yellow, go easy with that water. It's got to last till Dubai.
Okay, Red. I'll be careful.
Guess how many weeks it will take Red and Yellow to cross the empty quarter desert from Jeddah to Dubai and win great M&M survival kits with laptop, mobile phone, and GPS tracking system, and lots more. Count the colors inside M&M's packs for a clue.
Yellow, you crazy nut, the water. It's all gone.
Ow, you don't have to hit me.
We'll never make it now.
Subway Restaurant's Storytime Theater proudly presents Jack and the Beanstalk.
Fee-fi-fo-fum. I smell something delicious. Hey, little fella,
Rocky.
What you got there?
Oh, this? It's the big hot pastrami sub from Subway Restaurants.
That does look tasty.
It sure is. Climbing that beanstalk out there makes you hungry.
You mind if I have a bite?
Sure! I'll trade you for that goose over there with the golden eggs.
You got a deal!
Hungry for something big? Then pick up a big hot pastrami sub from Subway restaurants. Layer upon layer of delicious hot pastrami stacked high and toasted to flavorful perfection on freshly baked bread. Topped with pickles, mustard, and melted Swiss cheese, it's the perfect way to satisfy any giant-sized appetite. Big hot pastrami available at participating restaurants for a limited time only. See restaurants for details. Subway. Eat fresh.
I remember a loud noise, and then everything went black.
I was set on fire, and I couldn't breathe.
I saw the fireball. Everybody was panicking. I have never been so afraid in my life.
Everything changed after that.
I'm Trace Adkins. I want to tell you about these true American heroes and how you can show your thanks by helping them through Wounded Warrior Project.
The person who went to Iraq is by far not the same person that came back.
I was very isolated. I didn't want to talk to anybody.
I felt like there was no one there. There was no hope.
There's this feeling of brokenness, not being the person that I used to be. I had thoughts of ending my life.
Your gift today of $19 a month can help us provide the programs and services desperately needed by our wounded service members.
When a person is scared and confused and alone, Wounded Warrior Project has been there to help them.
The needs aren't going away. Post-traumatic stress disorder is not going away.
The Wounded Warriors that are out there need help. They're going to be around for years to come.
Call or go online with a pledge of $19 a month and you'll receive this Wounded Warrior Project blanket.
I'm able to do a lot more now. I've come a long way.
It's so much emotional healing that goes on.
It's great to know that there's an organization out there who's willing and able to help.
The job of helping thousands of our wounded warriors rebuild their lives is massive. That's why your gift of $19 a month is so important. Please call or go online right now.
There's a man who lives a life of danger. Everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. Yet every move he makes, another chance he takes. Odds are he won't live to see tomorrow. Secret Agent Man, Secret Agent Man, they're giving you a number and taking away your day.
All right, folks, this is Scotty Roberts. We're back from our break right here on the Situation Room. If you're just joining us, it is Rocky Stucci, John Ward, and me, Scotty Roberts. But right now, I'm going solo in the second segment because John Ward is out speaking at an archaeological conference in Copenhagen and could not make it back in time for the show. And Rocky Stucci, who was opening up the first segment with me, had to step away for a news crew that has come to his home to interview him. Now, you might think that, they're interviewing him for the Situation Room and for the IPBN Alternative Talk Radio Network. No, there's an incident that Rocky is going to talk about when he comes back that happened to him over the weekend where in the middle of the night, his family was all pulled out of their house by a SWAT team. And he's going to give you the details of that. And my first question to him was, did you feel like all this stuff you talk about, that the government, the secret government, is finally onto you and they've come to arrest you and take you away to a FEMA camp? And he just laughed. And he said that may have gone through his mind. But he's absolutely that's absolutely nothing that it had to do with. So he's going to talk to you about that when he comes back, and he's going to tell you the story of that. But before that, we went out to the break, we were talking about this Hillary Clinton email scandal and how she apologized for it. This is something that she previously had not apologized for and said she would not apologize. And now on CBS News on ABC News over the weekend, she apologized in an interview and said she takes full responsibility for this. Now, I'm curious, and I want to ask you, what do you think about this? Do you find her as finally being somebody who is owning up to it, and this then boosts her in your eyes? Will it boost her in the polls, you know, which are just temporary anyway, especially at this time in the election cycle, the campaigning cycle? But do you see her as somebody who is being sincere? I tend to not see her that way. But then again, I'm also a guy who has been very conservative in the past, and I would call myself radically centrist right now. Thank you, Micah Hanks, by the way, for that moniker. And I'm stealing it from him. And so I am radically centric with a very conservative bent on certain things and a social liberal bent on other things. But I look at what Hillary Clinton has done, and I have watched her. I've watched the Clintons since the Clinton presidency. I was here when they were elected into office. I used to have a bumper sticker on my car back after 19—when was he elected into office? Was it— Reagan went till 88. Bush took over in 88. And then Bush ran again. Yeah, it was 92 that Clinton was elected into office. And when he was elected into office, I watched all through. I voted for Bush. I had a bumper sticker on my car that said, "Don't blame me, I voted for Bush." And that actually got me out of a speeding ticket from a state trooper once. He pulled me over and he said, "Do you know how fast you were going?" And I said, "Yeah, I think I do. I think I was going a little too fast." And he says, and he pauses, he looks backwards, he says, "Is that your bumper sticker in the window?" I said, "Yes, it is, sir, officer." And I treated him with respect, by the way, kept my hands at the 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock position on the wheel. I didn't get out of my car, I didn't yell any nasty expletives at him. But he said, "That's your bumper sticker?" And I said, "Yes, it is." He kind of looks down at me, he says, "Get out of here." And that's all he said to me. So in other words, acknowledging that he agreed with me and it was deserving of getting a break. But I watched the Clintons all through the 90s. I've watched Bill Clinton through his post-presidency. I've watched Hillary Clinton since she became a senator and then became the Secretary of State. I remember in the last election saying after Obama was elected into office, I actually said, "You know, I think I would have preferred Hillary Clinton being in office to Barack Obama." And I found at the time, I thought that she may have been, even though not representing my political mindset, that she would have been a better leader than Barack Obama. Now I have watched things that she has done, the different scandals that are mentioned. You look at Benghazi. I'm sorry, folks. You need to go read up on Benghazi. We'll tell you a little bit more about that as we go here. But I believe she did an abysmal job with Benghazi. I think she was not, you know, they say, what did Harry Truman have on his desk in the presidency in the White House a long time ago, 70 years ago? He said, "The buck stops here." And I think that's it with Hillary Clinton. The buck has never stopped there for her. And that's a big problem. There's always the passing of blame. I watch what she's done with this now. The most recent and the biggest thing that has affected her campaign has been the email scandal. Some people want to blow it off. But ask yourself a very important question. And I have to ask myself this same question. When you want to excuse a politician who is in government, are they not usually the people that you either voted for or the people you would like to vote for, or they represent your political mindset? You may find them perhaps personally on a personal level. You may not like that person at all in that office, but you will support them because they support your political point of view. It's like we've said sometimes during elections. I may not like the guy who's running, but I'm voting for him because he's better than the other party taking the seat. And I've done that in the past. I have voted on a party line. Even though I'm not GOP, I'm not Republican, I have voted Republican because I've said to vote my conscience at times is throwing away my vote because the majority of the country is going to vote for one of two political mindsets. That's the way our system works at present. And so I still have problems with the fact that we're a two-party system, but that's the way the bread is buttered right now. So I'm asking you this question. Do you support Hillary Clinton because you believe her and believe she is a decent person and should be running for the office of president, should even be sitting in the office of president? Or do you support her solely because you believe this is the only person that's electable into that office right now and I'm supporting them, so my political party and my political mindset gets into the seat of power, for what it's worth? And there's something that I think we all need to do. I need to ask myself that same question when I support certain candidates for office. And I fulfill my responsibility as a citizen and I vote in the elections. So when I do that, am I just supporting somebody especially when I see a scandal or I hear something that's said negatively about them? Do I support them solely because they represent my party or because I really believe in that person? And I've seen this, and I've called it, you know, in a derogatory way, I've talked about the love affair that the left has with Obama. There's no wrong that Obama can do. But the problem is there is wrong that Obama can do. There's wrong that Mitt Romney could have done. There's wrong that Donald Trump could do. Carly Fiorina, Sanders, all these guys, everybody can do things that aren't right. Everybody could probably do things that are good for the country, but it all comes back to whether or not you support the political mindset. And so don't find yourself in the trap of saying, I believe in Hillary Clinton just because she represents your political mindset. And I have to do the same thing with my candidate. And any of you out there that have different candidates you support, you've got to look at them and say, do I support them solely because I think they're the only one that's going to get into office and I got to support them? When it comes down to filling in the little dot or pushing the button in the voter booth, what are you going to do? If you have a crisis of conscience with a particular candidate, what are you going to do? If they represent your party's mindset or your party's political philosophy, are you still going to vote for them? Or are you going to write something in? Maybe if we all did our write-ins for the people we really thought should be in the office, maybe it would turn things over. But we're all so afraid when we go into that voter box of not being able to get the mindset that we support into the office. And that if we don't, the country's going to go to hell in a handbasket. And so we vote party line as opposed to voting conscience. Unless you could put into the category of conscience, my conscience says I need to vote for the political mindset no matter what the individual is really like. And what this comes down to me, for me, is with Hillary Clinton. I do not think she should be elected to the office. I do not think she has the character. I do not think that she will do what is necessary to uphold the laws of the land as the supreme executive of the country. I do not think she will do what is best for the country. And she seems to have a long track record of somebody who will cover up mistakes as opposed to own up to mistakes. And this email scandal is one of them. And a day after declining to apologize for her use, one day after declining to apologize for her use of a private email system while she was Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton told an interviewer on Tuesday that the arrangement was a mistake and that she is sorry for having done it. She said, this is a quote, as I look back at it now, even though it was allowed, I should have used two accounts. That was a mistake. I'm sorry about that. I take responsibility. This was with her interview with ABC News. Now, the statement was the furthest that Hillary Clinton has ever gone in showing any kind of remorse for that email arrangement that she had set up, which mingled her work and her personal communications and kept them outside the regular State Department email system. Remember when she talked about that? She talked about, oh, the emails were to my husband, Bill, and to this. And then you had Bill coming out in a different interview saying, well, I've only ever sent two emails in my life. So out of the 30,000 emails she sent in, there were only two of those were for Bill. But she used that as one of the primary excuses for why she did what she did, that these were personal emails and that she didn't know anything was classified. She said, I never saw any classified emails. And then she later said, I didn't see any emails that were marked classified. Well, what she failed to tell you is that many things weren't marked classified until after they were seen. So she's trying to mislead. She didn't come out and say, well, nothing's classified by markation when it comes in. It's just believed that the person who is elected into this high office of the land, the third in line to the presidency, should there be anything, she's the third in line for that seat. Should the president die, the vice president die, or become incapacitated, it's the Secretary of State. This person is supposed to be somebody who knows what is classified and what is not classified information. And while people think that this is a small thing, it is not a small thing. And when you start then tying in the Clinton Foundation into this mess, there are favors granted to by way of voting, by way of political stances, to some of these nations that have contributed to the Clinton camp, the Clinton Foundation. And this is another big problem that's linked to all this. These emails will reveal some of those connections. And they have already found, I believe it was the last I heard, and I was pretty checked out because of the holiday weekend leading up to already today. It's Thursday. Can you believe it? It's Thursday already after a holiday weekend. And I believe the last I had heard out of the 30,000 emails she said they turned over, they found, if I'm not mistaken, 162 that are classified. And she had said they weren't classified, but the FBI is investigating whether the system that was maintained on a privately owned computer, the server at Clinton's New York home jeopardized classified information. Why in hell would a Secretary of State put classified information on a server in her house, in her home? In interviews on Friday with NBC and Monday with the Associated Press, Clinton had declined to apologize. Even as she said that, the arrangement was a poor choice that she regrets. She told NBC interviewer Andrea Mitchell that she's sorry that the issue is confusing for people. I'm sorry this is confusing for people, but she insisted that she had done absolutely nothing wrong. She would not apologize, she told the AP, because what I did was allowed. Now, all of her Republican critics have begun to use the question of an apology against her. If you probably heard some of that in the news. They were undermining the campaign's plan to address the complex email issue more directly and with greater humility. Questions about the private system have contributed to Clinton's slide in the polls, with more people saying they don't trust her and they do not see her as trustworthy. Did you know that when asked on the street in a poll, and I don't remember, I think this was either a Pew poll, or I'm not sure who did the poll, but there were questions. They said, what are the three words you would most, what is the top word you would most associate with Hillary Clinton? And they chose the top three of those words, and they were untrustworthy, dishonest, and I can't remember the third one off the top of my head, but it was, in other words, very similar to that. And this is what people think of her. A Washington Post ABC news poll. We're not talking Fox News here, folks. For all you Fox News haters, Fox News, they fabricate the news and they just make things up, right? What a bunch of hogwash that is. But let's go. It's a Washington Post ABC news poll this month found that 53% of Americans now see Clinton unfavorably. And 53% of Americans. That's not 53% of New Yorkers that walk by an ABC poll on the street. This is 53% of America, more than half of America, sees Clinton unfavorably. That rating rose by 8 percentage points since earlier in the summer, tipping the balance to a majority of Americans, of Americans now seeing her in an unfavorable light. Clinton turns over copies of roughly 30,000 emails at the State Department's request late last year, nearly 2 years after she 2 years after she left office. At the same time, she directed that a slightly larger number of emails stored on the server be destroyed because she deemed that they weren't that they were personal and not part of her government business. Now, remember, I told you all those were personal. Remember, I just said, oh, those are personal. I was emailing Bill and my yoga instructor and stuff like that. Whereas Bill came out at the same time in a private interview, a separate interview, saying, I've only ever answered two emails in my life. So those two emails were part of the 60,000 that she destroyed. So initially she refused to turn over the server, but she finally did in August. And you know why she did in August? Because the FBI wanted it. CIA was now involved. FBI is involved. And Clinton told ABC that she did not send or receive classified material on the account. And she said that she's trying to be as transparent as I possibly can. That's the best Hillary Clinton I can do, Rocky. You like it?
I am back, sir. Thank you for covering for me. That was
sure.
It was the second one today. I didn't expect all this to be happening here. So
sure. Well, you know what? Let's wrap up on Hillary Clinton, and maybe after the top of the hour, come back and tell your story. But late Tuesday, the campaign sent a message to supporters in Clinton's name, reiterating the apology. It's like Rocky gets on air and says, I apologize, you know, for, you know, like that guy deserved it. And, you know, that guy did. But there was probably a guy or two in there in the whole line of things over the last 20 years that didn't deserve it. I want to apologize for that sincerely. And then it would be like all of us as supporters emailing everybody out there and going, yeah, Rocky's sorry. He's really sorry. So this is what her followers did. And so donors, activists, they've all been complaining to campaign headquarters for weeks that the email issue was being mishandled. And it largely is their concern and disappointment Clinton is trying to head off. And she said, I want you to hear this directly from me, she said, this emailed statement to her supporters. And here it is. She said, yes, I should have used two email addresses, one for personal matters and one for my work at the State Department. Not doing so is a mistake. I'm sorry about it, and I take full responsibility. Clinton then went on in this email to stress, as she regularly does, that her personal account was above board and that, quote, nothing I ever sent or received was marked classified at the time. Remember, folks, I just covered this. It's all classified. It doesn't get stamped classified until after. So nothing was stamped or marked classified. It's classified because it's coming in to the goddamn Secretary of State of the United States. That makes it classified. Now, despite the campaign's effort to more directly confront its problems stemming from the email saga, Clinton's own reckoning with it still seems rather, and this is my opinion, I don't know if you what you think of this, Rocky, but her reckoning with the email thing seems real begrudging. She's doing it. She's dragging her heels into it. And in March, she insisted that she'd done everything by the State Department book, had nothing for which to answer. Last month, she said, I get it. She gets it. That voters have questions. I get it. I'm hearing you. I'm the woman that you need to elect to office. I get you. A man probably wouldn't. But a woman would. You women, you're all with me, right? Isn't it about time we had a woman as a president of the United States? Because you get it. Well, she said she got it, that voters have questions. And now that, by the way, that was a significant shift on her part, as was this decision to stop insisting the controversy was, get this, if you didn't catch this, she has said it was a manufactured Republican hit job. Remember what she talked about back several years ago? The right-wing conspiracy? It's a great white-wing conspiracy! The right wing is out to just get them any way they can. The way, and you know what? That great right-wing conspiracy has shifted over to Barack Hussein Obama. It's just a conspiracy. We just hate him. We so hate him. We don't care what his political philosophy. He's black, so we want him out of office. That's what the left would like you to believe. But until now, Clinton had always said that that although she would make a different choice today, there was really nothing inherently wrong with the way I did it then. Well, the problem with that, so Rocky, there's not really anything wrong with the way I badmouthed John behind his back, but I might do it differently if I did it again. But there's nothing wrong with the way I did it.
Scott,
but I'd still do it differently.
Let me ask, there's nothing on my end that could ever convince me. I am totally off board. I will never jump on ship when it comes to Hillary Clinton. Never. There's something, a thorn in my side about her. But is there anything she could say that you would give credit to, that you would believe?
I think I would believe it if she said, as you suspect with many politicians, we're out here just really to promote ourselves and our own cause. And many of the decisions I made had nothing to do with running the country well or caring about the people of the United States, but making sure I had my ass covered all the time. And I don't mean that to sound like comic, because I believe it happens everywhere. Everybody does that. Yeah. I think there are some that do it to a greater extent than others. So I actually believe that if Hillary Clinton said, you know what, I can't turn a new leaf, but I got to tell you, I've been out for myself. I've been out to push myself. I want to do better for the country. If she said to me, if she said to the country, I made mistakes, and you know what, I knowingly made mistakes, but I still want you to look to me and trust that I want to do things to better this country. I've never heard her actually say anything like that. The only thing that I think could redeem her in my eyes is full disclosure and one that says, I'm here for you guys, and I really am, and here's what I will do, and to be as open. What does it say? What does it mean to you, Rocky, when any politician says to you, I am going to be the most open and transparent politician you've ever had to deal with?
Well, that's kind of, didn't Obama during his campaign say that he was going to do all their debates and everything that was to be voted on? Wasn't it all supposed to be televised all the time? Wasn't everything
supposed
to be public?
We're going to be the most transparent administration in the history of the United States. That's exactly what he said. How many times?
Yep.
And folks, I do want to ask you, we're going to go out to break in just a few seconds here, but I want to ask you, how's that working for you? Has there been hope and change? You know what? Government does not get run on hope. You don't hope that your government is going to do better when you get into office. That's not a plan. That's not a presidential strategy. Hope?
Well, there definitely was hope, and there definitely was change.
Yep.
And the hope has disappeared, and the change is definitely happening.
Well, I'm gonna mimic something that Rush Limbaugh, since I mentioned him at the beginning of this segment, that I listened to him a lot back in those days at the Clinton era. Rush Limbaugh did say something the day after Barack Obama was elected to the president of the United States for the first time in 2008. He said, I hope he fails. He says, now let me clarify that. He says, I'm not attacking the man, but he says, I believe if Barack Obama succeeds at his agenda and his political philosophy, it is going to destroy the nation. So I have no alternative but to hope he fails. And I say the same thing about Hillary Clinton right now. There is a mindset there that I believe is wrong. And folks, you don't have to vote Republican, but you need to take your sights off of Hillary Clinton. Let her go. And that's all I have to say about that. And Rocky, why don't you take us out?
All right, folks, you're listening to The Situation Room with me, Rocky Stucci, and Scotty Roberts. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Stand by.
Egypt, the cradle of civilization, land of the ancient pharaohs, where the living and the dead dwell side by side, and home to Gebel El Silsila, beautifully situated in Upper Egypt amongst the bulrushes of the iconic River Nile and the ever-advancing sands of the evocative Western Saharan Desert, lays undisturbed 75 million years of Egypt's vast history until now. That is, when one thinks of Egypt, one automatically visualizes pyramids, sphinxes, the massive sprawling temples and shrines, the beautifully preserved tombs of kings and queens, and not forgetting the glorious treasure of the boy king, Pharaoh Tutankhamun. Yet very few have ever heard of Gebel El Silsila, a vast complex of sandstone quarries, ancient monuments, tombs, stelae, and now even temples, rock art, and workmen villages, not forgetting Roman roads, bridges, and fort, all associated with the quarrying of sandstone for the past 3,500 or more years. Now, Friends of Silsila brings all this and more to you directly from this ancient, wondrous site, with yet more secrets to be discovered by the team. But we need your help. There is so much work to accomplish that there's more than our lifetime's worth. Why not be part of that legacy? Immortalize yourself. Become the next Lord Carnarvon. Invest in the future. Be part of the discovery and the adventure. Why not come and participate as a volunteer? The Friends of Silsila requires ongoing funding from a wide range of sources, and there are many ways that you can donate to help ensure the continued archaeological work, guardianship, care, and preservation of this ancient historic site for future generations. We need your help, so come and join us today at www.friendsofsilsila.com, S-I-L-S-I-L-A, friendsofsilsila.com, and be part of the history. And be sure to look up Friends of Silsila on Facebook to join our group page. Friends of Silsila is a registered Swedish charity, and every penny it receives goes directly to the ongoing work at Gebel El Silsila.
Are you looking for a really awesome and amazing graphic designer? How about an illustrator or a photographer? This is Rainey Roberts, and I wanted to tell you how you can get my designer, illustrator husband, Scotty Roberts, to work for you on your project. Do you have an awesome self-published book but no cover, or even worse, a cover that really sucks? Do you need a kick-ass logo for your company or some f***ing awesome graphic designs for your ads or website? Then get in touch with my husband for the best awesome kick-ass design and illustration. He knows his stuff, and he's been at this for more years than I've been alive. Go to scottallenroberts.com. That's Scott with two T's, A-L-A-N-R-O-B-E-R-T-S.com, to take a look at his online portfolio of work, or call 651-468-8115. Now go out and kick some ass with some kick-ass graphic design.
Hire my dad, so he can take me to Disneyland.
The 4th Annual Paradigm Symposium will again be Bridging the Gap in Minneapolis, Minnesota, this October 1st through the 4th. The Paradigm Symposiums were founded and exist to present you, year after year, with the very best thinkers in their fields. From ancient cosmology to ancient aliens, archaeology to esoterics, alternative history to the sciences that illuminate our understanding of who we are and why we're here. Randall Carlson, Richard Dolan, Peter Robbins, Rita Louise, John Ward, Micah Hanks, and Barry Fitzgerald, along with several other phenomenal names in their fields, will be presenting at the Paradigm Symposium 2015, held at the Crown Plaza Hotel Mall of America in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Get your tickets now for what will be another amazing, inspiring Paradigm Symposium. For tickets, go to ParadigmSymposium.com or call 651-468-8115. Come to think, leave inspired.
There's a man who lives a life of danger. Everyone he meets.
Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame, with conquering limbs astride from land to land. Here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand, glows worldwide welcome, her mild eyes command, the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp, cries she with silent lips. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Do you know where that came from, Rocky?
You're going to tell me right now.
I'm going to tell you. That's on a plaque on the Statue of Liberty, the new Colossus. And so that is what is said at the Statue of Liberty. And by the way, I have, is that John Warda here? Hello, Dix. Rocky, I just want to ask you, what do you know about 65,000 Syrian refugees coming to the shores of the United States?
I don't know, John.
Well, see, that is why you're so irresponsible. You need to vote for Hillary Clinton. You need to vote for Barack Hussein Obama to become king of the United States and then remerge with the Union and let Her Majesty, God bless the Queen, take back over.
The saddest part, that's exactly what he would say, too.
That's exactly what he would say. John, I love you. Wherever you are. He may be listening somewhere in a car between Copenhagen and wherever he's living in Sweden. This is the big question I want to ask, and this is why I read that. Remember when we were school kids, and maybe not when you were, I'm older than you are, when I was in grade school in the mid to late 1960s and into the 70s, we were taught these things. And I remember in history, and we didn't even call it history. I don't know what we called it. But we were taught these principles in grade school. It's back when we said the Pledge of Allegiance every morning. That's back when we were told what the Statue of Liberty stood for. And I always remembered that, that give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shores, send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me, I lift my lamp beside the golden door. And we thought, this is where all of our ancestors at one point or another came over. Save for the Native Americans. Maybe they have a greater claim than we do when it comes to the more esoteric view of things. But this land became a place where the immigrants were welcomed. And many times those immigrants became the brunt of society. You remember, we talk an awful lot lately about Black Lives Matter and All Lives Matter and some of the black community that have big problems with the way they are still treated today because they in mass arrived as slaves. Well, the Irish were in the same condition. The Irish were also, there was almost a greater number of Irish slaves sent by the British government crown to the colonies before the founding of the United States. And the Irish bore a lot of brunt. There's no, where do you think the term Mick came from? Mick was a derogatory term for the Irish. The potato famines in the 19th century sent a hell of a lot of Irish over here as emigrants from Ireland to America. And they were looked on very poorly. The Italians were looked on, Rocky, very poorly at first. But they're ones who created their own communities and they did something in the country. Now, there's a big question that's out there without getting into Italians and Irish and blacks and so on. There's the question of the Syrian refugee crisis. There are senators that are calling on the United States to take on 65,000 Syrian refugees. Now, let me ask you, are we a nation that, as individuals in this nation, we should look at this and say, welcome, come on in? Or are there other things we have to look at? Are we tainting the message of the lamp beside the golden door? Are we closing the golden door shut because we have our own, I think we have biases that have been set up, and I don't use that as a term for bigotry or for prejudice or for racism, but we have some biases that are definitely beginning to come out when it comes to refugees from the Middle East.
Well, Scott, let me add real quick on that. You know, back when our forefathers, when our great-great-grandparents came to this country, the intent and the purpose of them coming to this country was completely different than what it is now. They came here with a dream. They came here with passion. They came here with loyalty and respect. A lot of them came here and then fought for our military. What we're seeing now is not that case. It's completely different. And the hardest thing, and this is why there's so much reserve on our thoughts on allowing more of these people to come into our country, is because we were talking about this during the break. Look at France. Look at Greece. Look at Italy. Look at these countries right now that are being flipped upside down. But let me ask a question.
Yes.
Now, what we're seeing in France, those are not Syrians.
No, they're not.
You know, and so
not all of them.
Is there a difference between the Syrian immigrants? Because I've seen some really emotional people coming off those boats from Syria. I don't see that with immigrants from other countries. I see them not accepting food because of the Red Cross symbol. I see them throwing water on railroad tracks. I see them robbing people's homes. I see them desecrating on people's yards and houses. I see them spitting on their country's flags. So how could we not be reserved on allowing these immigrants into our country?
Let me answer that by asking you a question, too. If you were in a position where you and your family are suddenly having to bug out, leave everything you have, hop on a boat and go to a foreign country for refuge,
yep,
would you be grateful to that country for taking you, or would you be spitting on their flag?
I would be extremely grateful, and I would abide by those countries' rules and laws.
Yes, because I am seeking help from them.
Yes.
Generally, if let's say I came to you and I said, Rocky, my family's starving, can you buy us a bag of groceries? And you go, hell, man. And you bring us a truckload of groceries. And if I said, now get off my property, I hate Italians, would that be showing my gratitude very well? Would you do it the next time I asked?
Right. You know, and this is the part that bothers me, is because we know that there's good people trying to make it. We know there's good people fleeing just to survive and to give their kids an opportunity. But we can't help but, because we are so saturated, and we don't know what the percentage is of what's really happening in this world, but we are completely saturated. I know you'll get messages and videos. I get messages and videos from people that will never survive no more than 5 minutes on Facebook or YouTube, of some of the things that are happening all around us, you know, in other countries. And I said this during the break, is that it's a different perspective. Now, if our country went under full-blown attack and we had to go to Canada, or we had to go to Mexico, or we had to go to a different country, I don't think that the majority, and here again I'm saying the majority of people, would act in a behavior that we're witnessing in other countries.
That's right.
But there's going to be that small majority that is going to be difficult. And is that going to be the majority that gets all the TV time?
I remember seeing pictures of refugees during World War II that were coming into Lisbon, coming into European countries, and they would drop down and kiss the ground.
Right.
Of that country they were coming into, not be resisting that country that they came into. So the question has to be asked, and this is going to sound alarmist and conspiratorial, but let me ask you, do you think when there are boatloads from Libya of Muslim men, we can't say that they're anything other than Muslim, we don't know if they're extremists,
right,
or radicals, but when they come and they're coming with nothing but the clothes on their back, the question has to be raised, especially when you've got Islamic radical clerics that are saying we are going to take over Europe.
Right.
Is there a legitimate question to be asked? Are any of these people coming over in large percentages people that are there to establish root cells for ISIS or radical Islam, and coming into these countries?
You can't. Go ahead, brother.
I was just going to say 65,000. I mean, just look at the Twin Cities alone, where you and I are on the outskirts of the Minneapolis-St. Paul area over here, just across the border in Wisconsin. You and I are roughly a half hour from downtown St. Paul. But the Twins, and I grew up in Minneapolis and St. Paul. The Somali refugee situation, they're there by the tens of thousands over the last 10 to 15 years. But the Twin Cities is also the largest exporter of Muslim Somalis that have been radicalized and have gone to fight for ISIS. So here's the big question. Are they here to take refuge but take advantage? Or are they here to take refuge and become part of this nation?
Well,
and I believe, by the way, firmly, before you say anything, I believe firmly in retaining your own religion, retaining your own culture, coming in. But when you look for refuge and you're adapting to that culture, you become part of that society. Right. You can still retain. You can be we are a melting pot. Remember, the Catholics were looked down on. When John F. Kennedy ran for president, first Catholic president ever to run and be elected, there was a lot of hype about that back then, about electing a Catholic into office. So,
and my biggest complaint here is that, you know, I don't think we'd have such a problem accepting those that came here and adhered to the laws of this country. And people that acted at on a mature adult level, their religion would be respected. Their way of living would be respected. But I don't think it's that. And the part that bothers me the most is that they're not grateful.
Yeah. And of course, we're speaking in general terms when we say that they're not grateful. I think that there are some of those refugees that are eternally grateful that the United States is helping. Right now, I've got an article in front of me. It's with The Guardian, and they're talking about these 65,000. Imagine, Rocky, if 65,000 Syrian refugees were allowed to come into the country, where would we put them? Where would they go? I'm thinking they would probably be divided up and sent to cities all over the United States.
Well, Scotty, before you read the article, where are we going to put the 200,000 Somalians in the Twin Cities?
Well, there's the question. There's 200,000 Somalis in the Twin Cities.
That's almost a quarter million people.
I know. That's a quarter million people in the United States. And now not all of them are radicalized, but there are some that are. Do you remember it was Horowitz, I believe was his last name. I want to say Ari Horowitz, and I might be wrong. But he did an on-the-street interview with some of the Somali people in the Cedar Riverside area of Minneapolis, which is right next to the University of Minnesota campus, right next to the downtown. It's right off. It's across the highway bridge from the downtown Minneapolis area, is the Cedar Riverside area. Theater district is in there too. Yep. And there's a huge Somali population there. And he did a man on the street, and he was asking them on the street about Sharia law, about different questions about Islam. And he said, do you want to see Sharia law? Which do you prefer, the law of the land that you're in now, the United States law, or Sharia law? And every single one he asked that question said Sharia law. And that they would like to see Sharia law imposed in their neighborhoods and in that city. And this is right here in our own town. And these are Somali refugees. So the question has to be asked, when they come in as refugees, should they be allowed to participate in government before they're a citizen? No, obviously not. But there's a big question. When you bring that many refugees in, what effect is it going to have on your society? And are they there gratefully accepting the help that's given? Should the United States, should maybe we take a stand and say, hey, we'll throw some financial aid at you, but you can't come here to live? Which you're seeing, I think England is starting to do that, the Great Britain. I think you're starting to see some movement toward that in France, Italy. They're starting, because the influx is enormous.
You know, if you incorporated Sharia law into our system, it would be a legal nightmare, because part of Sharia law would be criminal activity within our law. Is that right? I mean, they can,
yes,
they can
beat
their wives.
The problem is that Sharia law is religious law, and the government can, it's constitution. The government can establish no laws that prefer one religion over another. So Sharia law could not take foothold unless, this sounds conspiratorial, folks, unless there is a big enough block of people to forcibly make it happen. That's a question. Do we have to? And let me ask out there, is that a question we, and Rocky, what do you think? Is that a question we legitimately have to address?
No. I honestly, and this isn't racist, this isn't a hateful comment, but this country is established on a specific set of laws. and bringing Sharia law into our government, into our country, I think is a huge and deadly mistake. I do not accept it. I will not accept it. Just talking about it kind of gets me sick to my stomach.
I would love to have a Muslim on the show that would like to talk about this sometime, to ask them, if Sharia law is part of your religion and your religion is your life, the big circle is religion and your life falls into that, and you come to the United States and you integrate into the, can you properly integrate into the, into United States culture and society and still maintain life as a Muslim if Islam believes that religion governs the life? And I'm not talking about radicalism. I'm not talking about it. I'm talking about it's like we see cases like with Kim Davis, the Kentucky clerk who won't distribute marriage licenses to gay people because she says it goes against her religion, which, by the way, is a bunch of hogwash hooey. This is terse languages I can use because, frankly, there's so many other parts of her personal life that violate
right.
biblical New Testament Christian living and mandates that picking, she's cherry picking one. It's a political stance. It's a preference. She doesn't like gay people.
Right.
Has nothing to do with religious law.
Scotty, do you realize now, real quick before you continue, hold that thought, do you realize that the people that despise this Kim lady the most are the ones who made her the most famous?
I know. and by the way, Huckabee running for president on the GOP ticket, completely lost for me. I think the man is wrongheaded. I like him personally. I think he's a decent-hearted man. I really do. But he is not presidential material.
No.
Because he is somebody that will vote for preference of a given religion,
yep.
which is unconstitutional. And when he came out and stood with her when she was released from jail yesterday or the day before.
Yeah, he was crying.
He was crying. And he said, what did he say? This is, I got to ask you a question here. I want to ask you this question too. He said, she was released from prison by intervention from God.
Mm-hmm.
Released from jail. This is God intervening in this. Well, let me ask you. Where was God intervening when we have children in our own country that are starving?
Right.
Where is God intervening when we see white on white crime, black on black crime, where we see cops getting killed, kids getting killed, gang activity? Where is God's intervention? Where is God's intervention when we see our things happening in our country of a nasty. Where's God's intervention when little children are? We've got a rampant wave I can't think of the word off the top of my head because I'm ranting, but sexual crimes against mm-hmm. children.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't God intervened on that one? Where is God's intervention in the injustice in our land? But Huckabee gets up and says, God has intervened to let this bigot out of jail.
Right.
Now, granted, I went to seminary. I can quote you the verses that talk about, you know, the Apostle Paul wrote, homosexuality is repugnant to the nostrils of God. Now, there are verses like that. And by the way, in Levitical law, where it talks about the Old Testament, where it talks about Hebrew, Levitical law, Jewish law, and it talks about a man not lying with a man or a woman with a woman. It's in this whole list that says, if a man kills your goat, you shall shed one of his goat's blood. If a man kills your father, you shall also kill the man. You shall shed blood. There was blood, and everything. And it came down to the law of homosexuality. It says, and if a man should lie with a man, this is deemed inconvenient. And I thought, wow, this inconvenient law about homosexuality tucked into all these bloodletting laws about murder and everything else. And it calls it an inconvenience. It is not convenient for a man to lie with a man. And that's some of the verses that we base anti-homosexuality on in evangelical religion. Not solely, but yes, I do believe that the Bible itself and some of its New Testament teachings teaches against homosexuality as a lifestyle. It has never said deny them civic services. It has never said hate them. It has never said, don't give them a license to be married. It doesn't say, forbid them to be married. It talks about homosexuality. And, you know, there are some fine lines that get crossed there. But the same thing with all this stuff with the Kim Davis case. Now, I cited her because I was mentioning something about Sharia law. If what happens if – was it you, I think, Rocky, that may have posted or somebody that said something to one of your public posts that said something about, wow, if Kim Davis can take a religious stance for not issuing a marriage license, if you have a Muslim working in that situation, could they deny giving driver's licenses to women?
Right. Yeah.
Because they don't believe in it.
Right. Right. You know, and what you're referring to is again, a job through the state. And we can't really compare the two, but we see corporations right now in the United States that are completely changing their policies to accommodate to those of the Muslim faith. And again, I know this is not an elected official. This is not an elected job when we refer to making all these changes to accommodate one. But I see a big hypocrisy that's happening from, you know, there's just not a good balance that's happening right now. But yeah, go ahead, Scotty. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say Paranormal Sarah. Sarah Soderlund, whose show will be on in about a half an hour right after this one, Mysteries of the Mind, she just typed in the chat room. She says, I get that we should accept these refugees, but the illegal immigrant issue in America is so ridiculous, and I think it comes down to a presidential voting issue, and politics is the wrong motivation for taking in refugees. And I agree.
I agree as well.
I absolutely agree with that. I do believe that there are some political parties in this country that want illegal immigrants to be granted full amnesty and become citizens and not oust any of them because it creates a voting bloc. Sarah goes on, by the way, in the chat room to say there are refugees everywhere. What about the South American, African, and Australian natives? They need help, too. It isn't just the Syrian refugees. Now, so the big question comes, Rocky, and folks, I want you to think about this. Should we be taking in 65,000 refugees into this country from one country alone, from Syria, right, and dispersing them throughout the country? Is there any any eye we need to place on this to say, do we have to be careful who we let in as refugees?
We
have to be careful what they bring to our society.
I think that's it, too. I think that everybody, and I think Sarah kind of hit the nail on the head, because a lot of what we're seeing right now is based off a political agenda. They're trying to win the vote of somebody or something, or there's some kind of motive behind what we're seeing right now. How aggressive will these politicians be after the elections are done on trying to get these refugees into this country? We do not have a system established for this mass migration of these people that could be potential terrorists to this country. It's just like saying, let's get all the prisoners from Gitmo and let's find some state to put them here in the United States, even though they're terrorists, but let's give them a second chance.
And let me ask this before we have to go out to break. Is there any legitimacy to the idea that says the times have changed? It's not the late 1800s. It's not the early 1900s. It's 2015. It's the 21st century. Do we have to make any kind of a change for the way we take in mass immigration, if you will, forced immigration of refugees?
Well, I think that
we have to look at that.
The times have changed, but we still need to keep our core values on which everything was established.
I agree. And folks, you're listening to The Situation Room. This is Scotty Roberts with Rocky Stucci. John Ward traveling, is doing some speaking on archaeology and their finds at Gebel El Silsila in Copenhagen. And so he could not join us today. But you're listening to us right here on the IPBN Alternative Talk Radio Network. Sit tight. We'll be right back.
Jeddah in the M&M Survivor Challenge. The sun beats down on the empty quarter.
Hold on, Red. I need a drink. That's better.
Hey, Yellow, go easy with that water. It's got to last till Dubai.
Okay, Red, I'll be careful.
Guess how many weeks it will take Red and Yellow to cross the empty quarter desert from Jeddah to Dubai and win great M&M survival kits with laptop, mobile phone, and GPS tracking system and lots more. Count the colors inside M&M's packs for a clue.
Yellow, you crazy nut, the water, it's all gone.
Ow, you don't have to hit me.
We'll never make it now.
Subway Restaurant's Storytime Theater proudly presents Jack and the Beanstalk.
Fee-fi-fo-fum. I smell something delicious. Hey, little fella, what you got there?
Oh, this? It's the big hot pastrami sub from Subway Restaurants.
Mmm, that does look tasty.
It sure is. Climbing that beanstalk out there makes you hungry.
You mind if I have a bite?
Sure! I'll trade you for that goose over there with the golden eggs.
You got a deal!
Hungry for something big? Then pick up a big hot pastrami sub from Subway Restaurants. Layer upon layer of delicious hot pastrami stacked high and toasted to flavorful perfection on freshly baked bread. Topped with pickles, mustard, and melted Swiss cheese, it's the perfect way to satisfy any giant-sized appetite. Big hot pastrami available at participating restaurants for a limited time only. See restaurants for details. Subway. Eat fresh.
I remember a loud noise, and then everything went black.
I was set on fire, and I couldn't breathe.
I saw the fireball. Everybody was panicking. I have never been so afraid in my life.
Everything changed after that.
I'm Trace Adkins. I want to tell you about these true American heroes and how you can show your thanks by helping them through Wounded Warrior Project.
The person who went to Iraq is by far not the same person that came back.
I was very isolated. I didn't want to talk to anybody.
I felt like there was no one there. There was no hope.
There's this feeling of brokenness, not being the person that I used to be. I had thoughts of ending my life.
Your gift today of $19 a month can help us provide the programs and services desperately needed by our wounded service members.
When a person is scared and confused and alone, Wounded Warrior Project has been there to help them.
The needs aren't going away. Post-traumatic stress disorder is not going away.
The wounded warriors that are out there need help. They're going to be around for years to come.
Call or go online with a pledge of $19 a month and you'll receive this Wounded Warrior Project blanket.
I'm able to do a lot more now. I've come a long way.
It's so much emotional healing that goes on.
It's great to know that there's an organization out there who's willing and able to help.
The job of helping thousands of our wounded warriors rebuild their lives is massive. That's why your gift of $19 a month is so important. Please call or go online right now.
There's a man who lives a life of danger. Yeah, that's me. I live a life of danger, and I'm going to go into something very dangerous now, just to change the whole pace for a minute. Rocky, why do you think most couples that experience cheating from one or the other, why do you think those happen?
Sometimes I think you get really comfortable with the other spouse and then like weird bodily functions start happening and you just don't look at that individual as much like you used to.
Well, here, I'm going to give you a quick example. I talked to you about this in the break. There's somebody I know. He's a friend of mine. And I'll keep it clean. He said to me, he says, Scotty, I got to, you know, we're getting older and, you know, I got stuff going on. And he says, I got to tell you, he says, I went about a week ago and I had a big poo, big poo. That's what we'll keep it safe. There's safe language. And he says, it was so big. He says, it was like, I actually ripped the wall of my anus. And he said, I started bleeding. He said, I've been bleeding for a week from that. And every time I go, and he says, and it hurts every time I go. And folks, if you think this is gross, you know what? It is. And I kind of chuckled at him a little bit. And I said, you got to go get that checked, buddy. You just don't want to keep bleeding from your rectum. And so all that to say, as we get older, like I say, when I was in high school, talk about chicks and fast cars and that kind of stuff. And then when we got older, now we talk about it together with my friends, my age group, and we're talking about, you know, I had a big crap and I ripped my anus or my back hurts or this, or, you know, we're all getting older and things hurt more. But one of the questions that I saw, and I think maybe perhaps Sarah Soderlund would be a good person to talk with about this. I saw this article from Psychology Today, the 8 reasons that people cheat on their partners. And there's an 8 reason list here. And it goes like this. Number 1 on the list, lack of sexual satisfaction in your primary relationship. Now, this was the most common reason that was cited. Pardon, folks. I got a bean truck going by. You may have heard that. Most people interviewed on this. So the most common reason cited by individuals in the Omarzo study, and Sarah will probably know what that is, recall that the largest majority of the sample were women, but both men and women who enter into affairs are hoping to improve their sex lives. They may enjoy them with other mutual activities, but for whatever reason, the sex just ain't working out for them. And that is the number one primary reason that you see for people to cheat on their spouses or their significant others. The second was, now tell me how this differs from number one, desire for additional sexual encounters. Now, this was relatively an infrequent reason cited by the individuals in the study, but it's possible that more people had this as a reason but didn't want to admit it, as it's not a very socially desirable wish to articulate. If some guy just says, or some woman just says, well, you know, I cheat on my spouse, I love my spouse, but I just want additional sexual encounters. That's one of the reasons. For example, one man in the study stated that he felt he needed more sex in his life to reward himself for performing well at his job. Rocky, don't share that with Lisa, and I won't share that with Rainey. I want to reward myself for being superlative at my job, and I believe I deserve more sexual encounters to pat myself on the back, wow, so to speak, or to spank himself on his buttocks. 3, lack of emotional satisfaction in your primary relationship. Now this is a big one. Seeking emotional intimacy between partners can be nearly as compelling a reason to have an affair as can seeking physical intimacy. Participants who stated the need for the emotional closeness in an affair felt they were lacking a connection to their primary partners. So when I was in ministry, we used to have this thing called safeguard your marriage, I would tell men. Safeguard it. And how do you do that? You make sure you increase intimacy of a non-sexual nature with your partner. I think this is a big thing that a lot of people lack. It's that intimacy. And when you find couples that still have that intimacy, it's pretty few and far between. That's why whenever we hear somebody, we've been married for 12 years, and people go, oh, congratulations, you made it 12 years. Remember when it used to be, yeah, my wife Ethel and I, we've been married for 82 years. Mm. We got married right out of junior high school.
Right.
Grade school. And we've been farming ever since, and we've been married 82 years. We're now both going to be 98. And you say, that's amazing. 82 years with the same person. But then you think, today, we made it 7 years. Wow, you made it 7 years. Congrats. It's so big. It's because I think there's a lack of intimacy. And I believe there's probably other issues. We could actually do a whole show on this. Reasons why we don't have the intimacy we have, I think, can be somewhat blamed on our society and the way we do things. The intimacy, the immediacy of society, the needs for immediacy. So next one was wanting emotional validation from someone else. Is one of the next reasons. Number 4, and that's being appreciated as a key factor in emotional connection that partners feel toward each other. Partners may grow apart, as they do. They fail to acknowledge the needs that both have in their relationships. Well, I got needs too. Well, what about my needs? and we elevate our own needs above the partners. Now, it's, and you tell me truth, Rocky, it's very hard to live a lifestyle and to adapt a mode of life, especially in our culture, that says, I am focused on my partner and what they need.
You know, Scotty, that's me. It seems like there's a lot of emotional validation that people need. Is there no longer an independence of individuality within one person? It seems like emotions need a lot of coddling these days.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. You know, I think I'm starting to feel guilty. Sarah Soderlund just said in the chat room, projection, you have issues within yourself if you look outside your marriage. Just saying.
Just saying.
And, okay, oh, that wasn't aimed at me. Man, I must have a guilt complex or something because she wasn't directing that at me. Okay, anyway, moving on. Falling out of love with your partner. This was a relatively insignificant reason in the Yarmazo study because perhaps love is a really difficult thing to define by hard rules. In the grand scheme of things, having sexual and emotional intimacy seems to trump love. Now, I used to teach when I was in ministry and working with men. Believe it or not, I used to work with men in troubled marriages 15 plus years ago and in a small group in my church. And I used to tell them love is different than emotion. There is this almost positional love that you have with your spouse or relationship. That is, this is what I am. We are married. We are together. We love each other. But then there's the experiential, which is like the roller coaster. Today, oh, I'm on a high today. You know, we just had this great thing, or we got a bonus and we're going on a vacation. We're on an emotional high. But then you have the low where, you know, the house was foreclosed on or whatever it might be. It's the rare couple that sticks together through the crises the same as they are when they're on the high points. And so I think falling out of love with a partner can be defined as, if love was an emotion, it's a roller coaster, meaning your emotions can go up and down. Meaning the first day a guy wakes up and he notices his new bride no longer wakes up with her makeup done and her hair done and a rose in her teeth, and she has bad breath or farts in bed, and he might be going, oh, man. This isn't what I got into this for. And the emotional scale goes way down. I'm using a silly example, but I think falling out of love, I think love is the constant that has to abide while the roller coaster goes up and down of daily experience. So number six is falling in love with someone new. Very few people indicated they'd fallen head over heels for the person with whom they had an affair. Now, again, emotional intimacy plus sexual closeness seems to be more important factor that leads partners to stray.
You know, I want to comment on this, but I'm really nervous because Sarah's listening and she's psychoanalyzing everything we're saying right now.
See, I got to go back over and look at the chat and see if she's guided me for anything else. Uh-oh. Yes, Rocky, you were going to say. Or was that it?
No, yeah, I'm nervous to say anything because she's listening.
Rocky's sitting over there going, I'm just going to let Scotty dig this hole. I'm not going to say anything. Sarah's listening. Or in Rocky speak, you know, my wife, I love her. Hey, I love my wife. I love you. Hey, who loves you? Me. I'm not going to say anything. Okay. So going on, moving on. Number seven, wanting to seek revenge. Ooh, who said
that's a bit
revenge, that most worthless of causes? I can't remember who said that. Is it a movie or a play? So wanting to seek revenge in a relationship that's already suffering, the desire to hurt a partner who is or is perceived as cheating sometimes seems to raise the stakes significantly for the mere lack of intimacy that comes out of that.
So do two wrongs make a right when it comes to one spouse? Because you see lots of times a spouse will cheat on somebody, so then the other one, just to make it equal, will have to go cheat on somebody, and then that makes it okay? Does that make it okay?
Well, I think that's what makes shows like Cheaters and stuff like that work, is that a lot of Americans, I'm going to call them the Jerry Springer facet of society. If you remember who Jerry Springer was, he's been off for a long time. That idea that I am really hurt that my spouse had an affair or an emotional affair, or sorry about my trucks out here. So I believe it's wrong. It's morally wrong. You shouldn't do it. But now I'm going to do it because, hey, he did it.
Right.
Now, does that speak to a great intimacy that was there? Does that intimacy from one side completely vanish and disappear because the other person did something? Or do you try to salvage the marriage? Does doing the wrong create a right, or does that just create divorce right away? And if not divorce, just further lack of intimacy.
Right.
So that was number seven. Number eight, you're curious and you want new experiences. This kind of goes with number two, wanting new sexual experience. But people who cited this reason felt that they wanted something new. That this motivation went beyond curiosity into some type of contest to measure their sexual prowess. I've got to see if I can still conquer, the guy says. That's rarely a woman that will do that. Sorry, folks, whether you agree with me or not, men and women are wired physiologically different. We think different. Guys will think like this more than a woman will.
Well, most men.
Most men, I'm saying. Most men, yes. It might have been this less complicated for them, been just less complicated for them to compete on the tennis court or the golf course. But the allure of someone and something new led them to choose this particular form of challenge. Extramarital affairs, clearly, they represent a complete mix of desire, of anguish, need for connection, lack of intimacy, lack of closeness, lack of exploration. Lack of, say, color in what it's becoming a very grayscaled life. Rarely are they apparently entered into without conflict or even distress. That is the foundation for it, or the thing that bolsters the continuance of it. And they might be the product of or the cause of the ending of marital relationships. And happy couples may not decide to experiment, or may decide, I'm sorry, to experiment. They find their marriages survive intact, if not improved. However, as shown in these studies, that's pretty damn risky. That's a risky venture and not one for the faint of heart. And I would not recommend it. But if that's the way you want to go, Rocky, you just go right ahead. Who am I to say you know?
I love it. I love it when they come up. Do you still think I'm beautiful?
Oh, my God. That's a loaded question. That's the do I look fat in this question. No, honey,
right,
no.
Right, what are you supposed to say? No, you're ugly. Actually, you got really ugly. Sorry.
It's like my wife yelled at me once because I saw a woman at the beach walk by, and I was like, wow. And she goes, what are you looking at? And I said, nothing. I was just observing how icky her long, slender legs were. It's just, ew, icky. I prefer yours. No, that's dangerous. I didn't mean to say it that way. My wife has lovely legs. So there we go. Now, Sarah's saying a whole lot over here.
I told you I was nervous.
Yeah. Here. Let's see. Let me just say, let me look here. Let me see. Divorce really has become accepted by society. Sure. There's a less nuclear family support. I think that there's something wrong with that idea. Not what you're saying, Sarah, but the fact that that has become a norm. She says ego has a lot to do with it. Some people are prudes. Cheating can be that you don't want to be humiliated by a certain fetish by the spouse. I have to say, Rocky and I will wholeheartedly say, we don't want to be humiliated by all the fetishes our wives pull on us.
perhaps choking, puking, peeing, sex toys, whatever it might be.
It's much easier to experiment with strangers than a spouse that might look at you differently. Yeah, my wife likes to choke me a lot. She beats me about the head and neck, buffets me.
Puke.
I don't know. Well, maybe Sarah's talking about something different there. But risky indeed, she says. So, something else that's risky, and this doesn't have much to do with relationship. I think a risky endeavor would be standing out on your front lawn at 12:30 at night, having a smoke, and suddenly be surrounded by a bunch of men armed with M16s. Did this happen to anybody you know, Rocky?
It might have. As a matter of fact, Scotty, it did.
Really?
Yeah.
What a coincidence.
last week, brother. God, what a subject change. I'm still thinking about... the whole peeing thing and puking. I don't want to pee on my wife, so I'm going to go cheat on her so I can pee on somebody else.
Yeah, sorry. That's just not a thing that folks, I'm going to let you into a little intimate part of my life. That is, golden showers are just not in for
no,
me.
No, no.
That doesn't do anything for me.
That's what they call golden showers.
Yeah, that's what they call them.
Interesting. So my boys came up to me the other day. They're like, Dad, have you ever heard of dragon's breath? And I'm like, no, dragon son.
Breath? Like incense?
No, that's dragon sense. Okay, wow, this is, I can't believe I'm actually going to say this live okay. on the Situation Room. John would be completely disgusted right now, and he'd be ashamed.
John would say, wait, Rocky, before you start, let me get on my gimp suit and my gag ball.
People allow somebody to pass gas in their mouth, and then they light a lighter, and they blow that gas onto the lighter to create a flame.
Folks, you heard it here first on the Situation Room. There will be an instruction manual posted on the website.
Oh, seriously.
Rocky's putting together a photo essay on this.
I started gagging right there.
So the big question is, do you want to be the dragon or the acceptor of the dragon's breath?
I can't believe that. This is what kids are in junior high talking about now. How could you?
Oh, my goodness. I hope we didn't lose our audience there.
So if you had
folks,
a choice.
We didn't say we're doing it. We're just reporting the news.
If you had a choice, Scotty, you had to do one or the other. Would it be the golden shower or whatever you call it? Or would it be the dragon's breath?
I think since I have an infant living in my house, 9 months old, my little daughter, and I've got a 3-year-old and I've got a 6-year-old and I've got a 14-year-old and twins who are now 23. I've had plenty of urine on my clothes, on the floor that I've had to mop up, all over my hands. I think I could handle being urinated upon more readily than I could have somebody actually leaning down and putting their butt cheeks to my face and flatulating in my mouth, so I could blow it out with a blowtorch.
That could leave like
I see many, many problems with that one right there. There are big red check marks for me.
Oh man, I didn't know how to take that. Yeah, that would leave definitely a coating within the whole.
You know, I could hear it now. Rocky will come on the radio and say, guys, I'm here today, and I just want you to know that and we'll know what he's been doing. He's been blowtorching dragon's breath.
Oh,
Rocky.
Okay.
So you had an experience with guns this weekend, didn't you?
Yeah, a bunch of M16s. It was fantastic. It was fun. It was exciting. Really quick, I'll just give a couple-minute version, and maybe next week we'll touch on this a little bit more. That's actually where I was during the first segment. The second news channel of the day came over. It was Channel 5. And they wanted
Channel 5, Eyewitness News, KSTP,
yes.
Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Well done, Scott. Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Thank you.
No, about 12:30 at night last Saturday night, I was sitting outside just having a smoke, and all of a sudden I had a flashlight on me, and a guy called me out to the street. At first, I was just like, brother, hey, I'm like, all I see is a light and hear the man's voice right now, so I have no idea who you are. I get out to the street, and he identified himself as a SWAT member, and then I look to my left, and I look to my right, and I'm completely surrounded by people on SWAT. Long story short, what happened was, is there was a fake 911 call. Now, we have an idea of who it could have been. My neighbor's name is Kevin. We live in a fourplex. Somebody called the operator. They did not call the 911 line. They called the regular line, office line, to the 911 operator and said, my name is Kevin. I just shot my girlfriend in the face. Any cops come near my home, I will shoot them, and I have C4 on my doors.
I actually heard the recording of that 911 call.
It was chilling to hear that, actually. It was more disturbing for me to listen to that call and to the communication between the law enforcement and the 911 operator than the actual experience. But it was a prolonged incident. They pulled me out first. They had all my neighbors out. Still had my wife and kids in the house. We didn't know for sure the legitimacy of this call. I was pretty upset with the fact that I was stuck on a corner and my kids were still in the house. I would rather take my life or have somebody take my life and endanger the life of my family. But this is kind of the problem. We were started touching base on this a little earlier in the show, is that this is kind of the problem with the breakdown in society. And we're talking about bringing all these immigrants in this country, but yet even without immigration right now, we have this instability within our own people with this big separation, whether it be religion, race, whatever it may be. And this is what's happening a lot. I mean, how many police officers died just the last 2 weeks? But yet you see
right.
No leader of this country step forward and speak on this. And so now they're doing these 911 calls. They're lowering police officers out, wasting taxpayer money. And it could be with the killing of these police officers, there's this high tensity in the air of these calls now. So they're not just going to a call already risking their life. Now they're going to a call to try to help somebody with the potential of an ambush. And this, we were kind of a product of what just happened. Now, whether it been my neighbor's ex who set this up, or if it would have been some cockroach out there who thought that this is enjoyable to do to disrupt.
Have they found out yet who's made the call?
No,
it was a woman's voice.
It was a man's voice.
I thought it was a woman.
Now my neighbor and his ex, they are having some situations through the, you know, here we are talking about cheating and relationships and
right.
So I believe there is some instability there. Now she is still active military down in Texas, so she's very smart. They knew not to call 911 because that's a traceable number. So that's why they called the office line to the 911 operator. They called the office of the dispatch. So they cannot trace the phone number. And that's all they would have to go on was the number, and they can't. So unless somebody came forward and admitted guilt, I don't think they're going to figure out exactly who this was. But I don't care about me. You know, I don't care about the adults. The fact is that a SWAT team had to go into my house to get my wife and three kids out. And you want to talk about feeling helpless? And
did you get a flash at all when you first saw a bunch of men run up to you with M16s drawn? Did you get a brief flash of saying, uh-oh, EBN special report has gotten me in trouble?
Well, you know, I'm passionate, and I do call some people cockroaches quite a bit. But that's about as far as I go. But it's funny because you do go through things in your head. You know, what did I say? What did I do? I'm very open about my past and where I come from. And I've had some pretty serious situations in my life. And so it's like the old stuff comes back to surface. And you,
right,
you go through all this stuff in your head. Okay, do I got anything in the house that I shouldn't have? Is there anything in my truck I shouldn't have? Long story short, it was a sad day, and and the biggest thing here, folks, is the reminder of how vulnerable we really are.
Yeah.
We are very vulnerable, and as confident as we feel most of the time, there's always that quick reminder of you ain't as big and bad as you thought you are.
That's right.
You know, that was really, it was eye-opening for me. So, Scotty, make sure you're watching tonight at 6 o'clock, Channel 5.
I'm going to watch Channel 5 News tonight. And I got to say one thing about that. Was it Benjamin Franklin who said, or was it Jefferson who said, liberty, too, must be limited in order to be protected? We are basically a bunch of, and this is something I'd like to ask Sarah about eventually, is are we just another version of Lord of the Flies with more civilized laws, what we deem civilized laws, put in place? Without the law structure we have, would our liberty be so rampant that we would become, and folks, if you don't know what I mean, look up Lord of the Flies, become tribal, and would there be just savagery without our laws? Without that, this is what we are. It's just a question I have. Is Sarah there by any chance?
I am. I'm ringing her as we speak.
Okay, well, that's a question. I'd like to examine that question in a future show. Are we just, folks, think about this question seriously. Write us with your comments about this. Are we just really as savage can be? And the only thing that makes us any different
is that
we have an instituted government. Sarah, there's questions I want to talk to you about later, but before we have to go, and we've got about 30 seconds left of this show, I'm going to give you a multiple choice test.
Ooh, okay.
All right, choose one of the four. A, A, dragon's breath. B, golden shower. C, all of the above. D, go piss up a rope. I don't want to answer this question.
Don't pick D.
Well, obviously, I'm not prepared for that question. It depends on what, in what scenario. Like, is it get peed on or die? Then I'll get peed on. Is it get peed on because that turns me on? And I'll say, probably not my thing. Dragon's breath, I assume, is your farting scenario, in which I would have to agree with you. I couldn't handle that.
I was gagging. I was. I almost puked just talking about it when we were just talking about it.
I got to tell you, Sarah has elevated our base talk to something more Classy. Well, let me answer that this way. So, Sarah, you can contemplate that.
My dad used to say anytime that I was in a difficult decision, like, you know, what socks should I wear for school or whatever, what have you, he would always say, would you rather suck the snot out of a dead fat man or would you rather slide down a mile-long razor blade into a puddle of alcohol?
I'll take the red socks, Dad.
That was always what he would say. And so it was like, I think that now and I'm between two tough choices. It's like, instead of the it's between a rock and a hard place, it was, would you rather suck the snot out of a dead fat man or slide down a mile-long razor blade into a puddle of alcohol?
That's rough.
Yeah. So hard choices are easy for me to make, depending on the situation.
Well, and now the hardest choice of all for Rocky and I is the choice to say, we have to end this show and let Sarah take over.
Oh, I know. Isn't it?
It's horrible. Folks, you've been listening to The Situation Room. We hope you enjoyed it today in all its aspects. And for me, Rocky Stucci, and the traveling John Ward, we want to say thanks for listening. And we'll catch you with the Intrepid radio program Sunday night, EPN Special Report Sunday night, and right back here again next Thursday, 3 p.m. Central Standard Time on the IPBN Alternative Talk Radio Network. Take it away, Sarah.
Agent man. They're giving you a number and taking away your day. Swinging on the Riviera one day, and then laying in Bombay Alley next day. I know you let the wrong word slip while kissing her sweet lips. The odds are you won't live to see tomorrow. Secret agent man, secret agent man. They're giving you a number and taking away your name.